Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Royals.
And gone!
Trust the same experts who make the right call for the Royals and go to kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
This is the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It falls to Ely on the volley! What a finish! Gotti Kingda has struck! It falls to Polino and he puts it in! To Johnny Russell, first time shot, and Johnny Russell has a hat trick!
The Sporting KC Show is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Superior light beer with only 95 calories and 2.6 carbs. Michelob Ultra. Find your fit.
Now your host, Nate Buchanan.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810, WHB. Nate Buchanan along with Allie Trost. Allie, how are you?
I am doing well, Nate.
Our good buddy Tom Bogert, who covers MLS, covers U.S. soccer, and all of those things, is going to join us and talk about all of those things. So that'll be coming up in the next segment. We're going to have a long-form conversation with him, so hopefully you really enjoy that. We're going to preview the upcoming match for Sporting Kansas City against the Vancouver Whitecaps in Vancouver on Sunday, 9 o'clock at night. Convenient kickoff time as you start the work week and all of that. But hey, it is what it is. We'll preview that for you. We'll talk about some other things that are going on in the world of Sporting Kansas City soccer. One thing I want to put out there for those of you that might be like I and the Glowing Dragons are working on right now, which is you might be looking to head to the U.S. Women's National Team game coming up at Children's Mercy Park later this month on October 21st. That's a Thursday night. You might be able to win some tickets here. So listen to this. There's an energy drink that is endorsed by Sporting Kansas City owner Patrick Mahomes called BioSteel. Now, the idea behind this is clean, healthy hydration. So it's sugar-free. It's an energy drink, but it hydrates at the same time. It's brand new stuff, and they're going to be doing samples of it at the Hy-Vee in Liberty on Saturday from noon to 2. If you go there, you get your samples, and you can register for 4 tickets to the U.S. Women's National Team game against Korea Republic at Children's Mercy Park. So, again, Saturday, noon to 2, get up to Hy-Vee, register, you might be able to win 4 tickets to that game. That's going to be a lot of fun, and I know so you're going to be there,
I'll be there. I'll be there covering the game. I applied for a credential, so I will be there as a media member, but I will definitely come by and say hello to the Glowing Dragons. But no, I mean, we had head coach Vladko Ananovsky on the show last week, and if you want to go listen back to that episode, we talk about the national team and some other things with Vladko. A really good conversation that you can find on the podcast page for this show, but Carly Lloyd's farewell tour. I mean, it's so crazy for me to think about the fact that, I mean, I've got her autograph on a jersey of mine that made its rounds to events all over the U.S. thanks to my great uncle Al getting signatures at different U.S. soccer things. But the fact that she is maintained physically and mentally what it takes to be a professional athlete, even at the age that she is at, is just incredible. I mean, what she's done and the level that she's continued to play at is amazing. So well-deserved retirement for her, and just an incredible, incredible U.S. soccer career, and just really neat that people that grew up in my generation loving soccer and the next generation all get to kind of experience the greatness of Carly Lloyd and, you know, watching the up-and-coming stars. Sophia Smith's a big one that everyone's got their eye on, and it's an exciting time. So some new blood being injected into U.S. Women's National Team, and a lot of players that people can have their eyes on, watch them in NWSL and abroad as well. But I mean, it's just, yeah, it's going to be a great game.
And it's a time that like I said, my daughter's team, the Glowing Dragons that I coach, we're going to be trying to get as many of the kids to go out and have a big outing there and have some fun. Role models, role models, role models. I love the fact that these girls get to watch professional soccer players, superstars, and dream of being them themselves. And broadcasters, too, like yourself, Allie Trost. And you're going to come to a Glowing Dragons practice at some point and show the kids. Because I want them to see our friend Sydney Miramontes, who plays for KC Woso, has come to, you know, she's kind of been like a celebrity coach for the girls. I want them to see there's other aspects of professional life in the sport of soccer for women as well.
Yeah, and I wish, like, growing up that I had maybe even known a little bit more. I think, you know, nowadays you see a lot more women on broadcasts. You hear their voices, you see their faces, which is great. But, you know, it's the beginning. And the more opportunities that come up with all these new mediums of sports broadcasting, it's just, it's only going to result in more jobs for so many different people, minorities, women. It's just, it's going to be a great thing. But no, I think, you know, if you love soccer, and I get DMs from parents even now, hey, my daughter's in eighth grade, she loves soccer, but I want her to see, you know, maybe other sides of the business. I mean, there's so many opportunities to work in sports if you're passionate about it. And I mean, you'll see this, Nate. I mean, we talk about this with Sporting Kansas City, like people who work there stay there. I mean, they've got some of the longest tenured employees there because you're joining a team. If you love playing on a team, sports present a really good opportunity to work on one as well. So yeah, it's going to be a really, really fun night, and just glad for, you know, that Kansas City gets this opportunity to host this game, because it's all helping us get closer to that 2026 hopeful World Cup bid.
Yeah, that's right. And there was a news release that came out from Sporting Kansas City today about a streetcar unveiling that that is going to happen on Thursday at 10 a.m. This media advisory came out and said the mayor and the bid director for the U.S. Nationals. Here, I'll just read some of it here for you. The Who. KC 2026 World Cup bid director Catherine Fox will be joined by Mayor Quentin Lucas and members of the KC 2026 Executive Committee, as well as FIFA World Cup veteran Benny Failhaber, to unveil the 2026 streetcar and answer questions about Kansas City's bid to host the 2026 FIFA World Cup. It'll be at 10 o'clock on Thursday, and at the Transit Plaza area located at the Kansas City streetcar stop at Union Station. So head on down to Union Station. We'll be covering that on Thursday. Everything we can do to show that Kansas City is ready for the World Cup would be awesome. And I mean, let's do it. You know, let's. Yeah. That's really cool. I love when the streetcar is done up in different logos and things like that. So I can't wait to see it.
Well, and I mean, it's not just us being out there and promoting the event. Like, if you are just listening to this, if you're downtown, whether it's, you know, around tomorrow when it's all, or not tomorrow, Thursday, I don't know what day it is, on Thursday when everything, you know, is unveiled, even if you're just going down there in the next couple of weeks, take a picture, post it online, tag the at KC World Cup Twitter. I need to get the exact handle on that. Tag the KC Sports Commission, tag everyone that you know to tag, to you know, put it out there that Kansas City and the soccer fans here, and sports fans here, not just soccer fans, want the World Cup in Kansas City.
It should be good stuff. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Tom Bogert. We're going to talk about the U.S. men's national team. We'll talk about the landscape that is MLS with six games remaining in the 2022 schedule before the playoffs roll around. That's right after this on the Sporting Kansas City Show, presented by Michelob Ultra. Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate you subscribing, downloading, listening, liking, all of those things. And of course, we're presented by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. It's time to talk to one of our favorite guys, a man who covers the world of soccer from an American perspective. Tom Bogert, freelance writer for MLS, does all kinds of other things. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Bogert. That's B-O-G-E-R-T. Tom, how are you, man?
I'm pretty good. You know, living the dream, right? We're getting through it. How about you guys?
Yeah, same. I mean, we're just getting ready to get back to the fall part of the season, which should be one of the most exciting parts of the MLS season, while also talking World Cup qualifiers at the same time. Yeah. And, you know, full disclosure for our audience, you know, this is going to air at 7 o'clock. We're taping this before the USA-Costa Rica game, so obviously there's going to be more information at our disposal after we have this conversation. But that never stops us, Tom, from freaking out about American soccer and casting stones wherever we can at the first sight of a bad performance. So how freaked out is everybody, should everybody be, after the game in Panama?
Yeah, that game was really bad. That performance is really bad. It was I don't even know how much you can even point to, you know, the technical, or getting even too deep into the way the game was played and the decisions that were made. It was, from the jump, the United States were second best to everything. They were slower. They were tepid. The decisions were slower. The you know, half a step off into every duel, and we can sit here and talk tactics, we can talk personnel decisions and everything that those went into it, but if the 11 players on the field show up and don't come anywhere near competing at the same level against their opponents, that's it. It doesn't matter if Pep Guardiola was on the sideline. It doesn't matter if, you know, every single player had these wonderful ideas of what to do when they got the ball. Everything was so slow and everything was a step behind, and that's just a recipe for failure. And again, that part of that is on the players. Part of that is on the coach. I do think that he was correct in having to rotate the team because there are games, you know, 2.5 every 3 days, and these are players that some of which are traveling from Europe, others are coming from America and all different parts of the country to go to three different cities in two different countries over, you know, 6 or 7 days. So you can't play the same 11 guys 90 minutes each. So that was all part of it, but just didn't work out, and it was really disappointing and insipid.
Yeah, Tom, I agree with you on the rotation side of things because, like you said, I mean, it's just the travel's too grueling to not make those adjustments and rotate guys in and out. But my girl Jenny Chu, after the fact, was like, hey, the 7 lineup changes was just a disrespect for Panama and what they bring to the table. Do you think it was more of not respecting the opponent or maybe a little too much confidence in the depth and the preparedness of the guys who would then be subbing in or, you know, coming into the starting lineup and coming up short?
I don't think it's disrespect at all. I think that this is just the nature of the modern game, and this is the nature of having a deep squad. Like, look, the United States, we were all patting them on the back and congratulating how cool it was that they had essentially two different rosters win trophies in the Nations League and the Gold Cup this summer. If you preach about the player pool, if you preach about we're one team, we're not 11 guys, we're not 14 guys, we're not 16 guys, then you have to rotate. And Berhalter said that today in his press conference that he wanted to make a point that he's like, hey, look, when I said that I take full responsibility for the loss against Panama and the way we played, I'm not saying because of the players I picked. He's like, we still believe in every single player on this roster. And again, we're a team, we're a pool, but you just go back to the team that was. Three of them up from the starting 11 in the first game didn't travel. Those are three subs you have to make right there. Maybe the argument that I would hear is whether 7 was necessary or not, and clearly there was a plan for Musa and Adams to split 45 minutes, so you can call it 6.5 because I'd rather have Adams on for the final 45 minutes anyway, or whatever you want to break it down with.
Yeah.
You know, maybe 6.5, if we're going to call it, was slightly too much, but I don't think that has anything to do with disrespect to Panama. I think that has more to do with focusing on your home games more, and again, still putting out a squad that you believe is good enough to win against anybody, and that's no disrespect to Panama just because a couple, you know, air quote regular starters aren't starting.
Okay, only in the world of U.S. soccer fandom, to me, is not being upset a hot take. But allow me to provide a hot take here, Tom. I'm not upset at all about this performance.
The microphone is on fire. Right now. It exploded in Nate's face.
It was lackluster. It was devoid of energy and life. It's disappointing. There's enough talent on the field to win a game in Panama. All those things. First of all, my first answer to that is welcome to CONCACAF.
Mm-hmm.
My second one is, it's like this, we have this duality as American soccer fans where on the one hand, we're sure that disaster is coming around the corner at every turn and that everybody who is American-based must be a fool or destined for failure. At the same time, these like unrealistic expectations for how we're supposed to perform. And I don't for the life of me understand how you can do both of those things. I'm very excited about this American soccer team and their chances to actually go make some noise in the World Cup, should they make it. I think there's a lot of young talent. Go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't know how much I left you out on the phone there. I meant to get out of the way and let you drop that ice out. But, yeah, no, you stumbled into something like, I don't want to like give, you know, trolls on Twitter, whatever you want to call it, like oxygen, but over the past couple of days, and I don't take any of this seriously. I laugh, particularly if it's an honest account. I try to play around or have fun. You know, I know that people care and have opinions, and that's all good. But like, I was been accused multiple times of manufacturing consent for bad MLS players and MLS narratives is one of the things I've been accused of, simply for the absence of, as you said, an absence of a hot take, the absence of me, you know, demanding that not only Greg Berhalter be fired, but probably exiled from the country for the rest of his life. I woke up today to somebody saying that, you know, U.S. soccer would be better off if I dropped dead, which I don't see the correlation there.
Not
so
true.
I'm not entirely sure. So. I don't think U.S. soccer would change whether I'm alive.
No, you're the problem, Tom.
I was very confused.
It's people like you that refuse to hold these guys accountable that's causing soccer malaise in America. I will finish a little bit of my rant here, Tom. So this is how I see it. There is young talent. There's more young talent. I don't think it's even a debate. There's more young, exciting talent in this country than ever before. This talent has shown multiple times through the course of this summer and fall that they are up for it. Ricardo Pepi being the most exciting recent addition to that, who has shown time and time again, every time he's gotten the opportunity, whether it's an MLS, All-Star game, whatever, that he's up for. There is even starting to become some depth in terms of, hey, if this guy can't play, we've got another guy that can play, as seen by the fact that Reyna and Pulisic are not in this competition, and yet the team still went out and won a home game in a resounding fashion. I think it's fair for Greg Berhalter to not exactly know how all of those pieces fit right now, particularly when it comes to the depth part of it, when it comes to, I got two of my biggest stars missing because of injury. Yeah. I've got other guys that need to rest at some point during this three-game window. Like, for example, I think he should have played Busio down in Panama. You know, that, and maybe I'm a little biased on that. But, you know, but to me, that's part of the process here of sorting it out. When Tyler Adams can't start, who goes in there? And he's supposed to just magically know that and have it all work perfectly in the jungle in Panama?
Well, and like,
I mean,
what?
I just think that's a little outrageous.
Was the United States supposed to go, like, undefeated in the qualifiers? I mean, this is the time, while still getting results, to figure those things out. And when you factor in the injuries as well, I mean, Tom, I'd like to know what you think about this as well, because a lot of what I saw on Twitter from the very level-headed fan base that we are speaking of, that we're all a part of as well. Like, people like to think that, like, if you disagree that you're not on the same team. It's like, no, we all want the same thing here.
I'll be despondent if they don't qualify for the World Cup. I mean, I'll be devastated.
I'll probably have to call off work for some time. So.
Yeah.
But no, like, Tom, the other part of, you know, the reaction was, there's too many MLS players on this team. Like, Greg Berhalter's forcing MLS into the... Like, maybe these people don't follow the league as closely as we do to, like, actually have as good of a pulse. But, like, what's your reaction to that argument that seems to be kind of sweeping the Twitters and other social medias?
I just think it's positively nonsense. And, like, I try not to give it any oxygen because, like, there's no big conspiracy. Like, I don't, I was looking back because... You know, I'm trying to check myself in. Like, I just want to, you know, reject things out of hand or make it sound like I'm being condescending or whatever to people. So, like, sometimes, like I said, sometimes I like to play around. If somebody's overly mean to me on the internet, I try to laugh about it, and then other people somehow take that as me being mean to somebody else when, you know, things are happening like that. So I was like, I'll engage on a few of these. And I looked into it. Like, first of all, the Nations League roster by this same very head coach had 4 of 23 players were from MLS. That has the lowest it's been for a tournament in recent memory, or maybe outside of Gold Cup. So, you know, I looked back at the 2010 World Cup roster, which is Bob Bradley, who people give him stick about MLS and domestic, whatever. He had, I think he only had 4 or 5 MLS-based players at the 2010 World Cup. In 2014, when Jurgen Klinsmann, who was, you know, the most public anti-MLS U.S. men's national team manager of all time, he had 9 or 10 guys on his final 23-man roster for the 2014 World Cup from MLS. Like, this is no different. If you look at the guys who are playing in Europe right now, even more so in the past, they're produced by this league. Like,
right.
I don't know where this narrative is coming from. And
like, Busio, you could also consider, like,
Greg
50-50.
Berhalter starts. Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, Busio was the day that he put his foot down in Venice, became a better player than when he was at Sporting Kansas City to some people. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm surprised that Christian Ramirez isn't getting shots for call-ups because he plays for Aberdeen in the magical land of Europe. And again, I don't even want to frame this like Europe versus MLS because it's not. For me, it's about who the productive players are, who the players are in form, who the players are that have been in the system, who the players are that fit well with the other players on the roster. Like, I don't
I don't look at all at MLS versus Europe because I just don't think it's sensical. Like
it's not relevant.
The MLS league is MLS is better than Austrian league. That doesn't mean that Sebastian Lletget is better than Brendan Aaronson right now, and that doesn't mean that once you start, like that he's just already over just because LA like the Major League Soccer is better than the Austrian Bundesliga. Like these are things that just don't cross my mind, and it annoys me that if there's a bad game where MLS players play, it's like people turn to people who cover the league as like, hey, see, look, like you're wrong or whatever. Like, and I don't want to come off like sound like I'm just defending MLS guys all the time because people don't see it sometimes the same way as if it's a younger player in Europe that has a bad game for the national team. Like, that's okay, he's young, he's playing in Europe, but if it's confirmation bias or anytime something goes wrong to blame the American players, the MLS best players. And again, I still don't want to make it one versus the other, but look at the European-based players who played against Panama. They were bad, too. Like, Shaq Moore wasn't good. I'm trying to think. Like, Yunus Musa was okay in the first half. He wasn't exactly great. Nobody played well. Nobody. So, like, it's just a weird way to look at it and scapegoat and try to compartmentalize that, okay, if we just fix this one little thing, then we'd be the best team in the world. So it really... one of the things that gets me worked up because I think that it's just such an insincere argument. I think you're going into it without the right intentions, and those are the ones that bother me the most.
Yeah. Well, it's also so overly simplistic. It's a way for somebody who doesn't want to have to pay attention to all these leagues and know all this stuff.
Well, and U.S. men's national team fans should be fans. If you're not a fan, at least like very behind MLS and what the league's doing, like to almost act like you're in this other, like you're against MLS for some reason because you like it's so counterproductive to what we all, again, collectively as fans of U.S. soccer want to achieve. Like you need all of these things to be operating at the highest level and in the healthiest, most like threat. Like, MLS is thriving right now. It's growing more and more. It's like, that's a good thing. Oh, my God.
The biggest storyline of this qualifying
camp. I wish every single...
Go ahead, Tom.
I wish every single national team player was at Liverpool, Barcelona, Juventus, and insert all of these super clubs. I would strongly prefer that. If there was 23 to 26 players on all of these teams better than anybody else in the world, and it doesn't, not just MLS, it could be Mexico, it could be Austria, it could be, Belgium or whatever. I don't care. I just, the best 23 to 26 players, it doesn't matter where they play.
Well, and it's also the best that fit together on your roster, too, because, it depends on what kind of system you're playing and all those things. But to me, the biggest storyline of this entire World Cup qualifying campaign to this point has been the emergence of Ricardo Pepi, who plays in MLS. After a bunch of other guys who were playing in Europe were given chance after chance after chance to take hold of the number 9 spot, and he's done more in 2.5 games than any of those guys have done in several opportunities. It's like the evidence is right in front of you, and that's not just because he's in MLS, and it's not just because those guys are in Europe that he's doing better than them. It's because it's up to each individual, and they're all in different spots in their career. So it's just that stuff is silly. But we could be completely changing our tune while this podcast is playing, because if U.S. doesn't go out and get a win against Costa Rica, I will be changing my tune quite a bit, Tom. I will be upset. I will say, okay, this is a problem. Yeah. They've got to take care of business tonight, and I know the game's going on right now, but in your opinion, what kind of a challenge is it for the United States, and what are you expecting in this situation?
Yeah, it's a big one. This is with two home games in this window against Jamaica and Costa Rica, and Jamaica had been struggling, and that was very important, and both in style and in results, that win against Jamaica. Again, Panama, you'd love to win. You'd love to win every single game, but in reality, like it's not right to expect that. So this game against Costa Rica takes on more importance, and this is why last window I wasn't as mad about the draw at El Salvador as I was at the draw at home against Canada. One, because the performance was equally very bad, but because you need to win those home games so you don't put yourself in a situation where if the United States drop points against Costa Rica, okay, you have to go to Costa Rica later in the window and win points. I don't want to be in that situation. So, again, that's, and as you said, my tune would change the same way that the Honduras game simply became must-win in the first window. It simply did. And that was one where I'm not sure if I would have went all the way to fire Berhalter or make a change or whatever, but I would have entertained it. Like, unlike just any old loss, and I wouldn't
be there against Costa Rica, but it would be a really disappointing result if they come out and play the way that they did against Panama or the way that they did against El Salvador in the first window and, you know, just look bad. And again, a Costa Rica team missing a few of their top players and just called in a 37 and a 39-year-old to make up the roster. So, it's maybe not a must-win given the points that have been accrued, but this would give them a world of difference if they get 3 points rather than one or zero.
I don't know if anybody else sees it this way, but everybody remembers the Trinidad-Tobago loss last time around. But for me, that loss to Costa Rica 2 games before that at home was where the thing really got lost. Because you got to win that game. You know, you can't get outplayed by Costa Rica on your home field. And I know that playing in New York, by the way, was a terrible decision, in my opinion, in that one. But so this is a chance to turn around and make that right. You know, win this game at home against Costa Rica.
Yeah, and again, like Costa Rica, and everybody's jumbled right now because it's the first 5 games of qualifying, so the nature is 3 points will move you up or down pretty easily. But Costa Rica are 2 points behind the United States. I don't know what exactly off the top of my head what the other schedule is of the night, but if results go a different way, the United States could drop to say fourth or fifth, and depending on who does what and what happens, then look, there's plenty of time for something to change, and that's not catastrophic. That's not bottom of the group, but again, with home games and this window a little bit easier, and you still have at Mexico, you still have at Canada, you still have at Costa Rica on the fixture list. Got to be 3 points.
Okay, let's move on to Major League Soccer, where there are no games being played tonight. But Tom, we were laughing before we started recording here just about how the season, like, it just at some points never felt like, oh my gosh, we're in the final stretch here. Like, they're just with all the different competitions and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, we were even joking how the Busio news feels like it was almost like a year ago, just because of how much time seems or feels like it's passed since all that went down. You, of course, had a lot of the scoops joined us here on the Sporting KC show. But just looking at where we're at in the season right now, and let's focus, I guess, first on the Western Conference, just because that is of interest to our fans here of Sporting Kansas City. Just, what are your thoughts of the upper half of the table here and how things might play out during these final few games?
Yeah, in Kansas City, the loss against Seattle kind of really hurt that chase to the top spot in the West. The top three, Seattle, SKC, Colorado, seems to be pretty set in getting away from the pack. I know that Portland are kind of making a move here, but it seems pretty safe to say that those three teams will be the top three, and then, you know, Portland fighting for that fourth spot, which would be a round one home playoff game. So, yeah, the top of this conference is really strong, just like it always is, and just like, you know, the top four of the conference should in theory always be. Kansas City should be looking at, you know, the bottom half, the playoff picture is still really jumbled, and when it comes to, you know, Salt Lake to even San Jose, they play LAFC. That feels like more of a loser go home kind of game. But you know, you never say never in MLS playoff chases. So who knows if your team will still be around, depending on, you know, a good or bad result. But you know, there are still going to be difficult games no matter what. And again, let's say that Sporting Kansas City finish second or third, that the sixth and seventh right now is LA Galaxy and Minnesota United. Both those teams are struggling, but you look at both those teams, they still have supreme quality. And in a one-off, even on the road for those teams, as we learned last year against Minnesota, in a one-off with teams with really good talent like they do, nothing is guaranteed. So it's all about follow-up, ensuring that they can wrap up the second spot and holding off Colorado and you know, put some pressure on Seattle to try to get that round one bye and hold to the event.
So on the other side of the table, so to speak, the New England Revolution are running away with everything, and they just look like they're never going to lose. I know that Bruce Arena got really prickly a couple weeks ago when he was asked about all the one-goal wins that his team was settling for.
Which sounds like Andy Reid last year with the Chiefs a little bit, with all the one-score games and kind of hurting them a little bit.
But I do kind of have this picture in my head of there are teams that are built for the supporter shield, which are teams that need depth and the ability to grind out results week in, week out over this marathon that we just discussed. And then there are teams that win tournaments. And I'm curious, do you see both out of this New England team? Are they both kinds of team? And what do you think of the East right now when it comes to what the playoffs will look like?
Yeah, I do. And I actually, and it's easy to say this in hindsight because of LAFC losing to Seattle in the playoffs when they set the league single season record for points and was to that point the best team I think I'd ever seen.
in regular season MLS, and, you know, I guess my memory, so not all 26 years, but, you know, the last decade or so. I think that New England, or this version of New England, is better suited than LAFC would be to that LAFC team, rather, would be to a playoff run. I think that those one-goal wins and lower-scoring games kind of, you know, lend itself to that idea. And like that LAFC team, they're going to have the best player on the field, no matter who they play in Carlos Hill. And if Carlos Hill is kind of bottled up or doesn't have his best game, you have Adam Bucha, Gustavo Bo, Taylor Buchanan as three game-breakers on their own. So they have multiple ways to beat you with high, high-end talent. They have Matt Polster, a very, very good defensive mid who, when I sit down and look at it, he's going to be in contention on my, you know, best 11 ballot for his exploits this year. You have a strong center back pairing, maybe not, you know, defender of the year quality with Andrew Farrell leading the way, but that's a very good player. And you have, you know, like a cheat code in goal in Matt Turner, just based on the advanced numbers of, you know, his save, his goal save versus expected goals conceded or whatever the exact metric is that I just butchered there. So I think that I wouldn't be worried about those tighter games, and in fact, I'd be encouraged that they have so much experience in that they can play tight games and not be like, oh my God, we're not winning 3-0 at halftime, or we're not winning by two goals in the 65th minute. Like, what the heck is this? And I think that their play style is Milionic, and I think that they'll take the game to most teams when they play, but they also have the ability to kind of sit in a little bit and try to win in transition with some of their, you know, better players. And Bruce Arena is obviously the most qualified manager in this country and as far as his resume. So he has a lot of experience in winning tournaments and doing well at tournaments. And I think that this team is really, really well positioned, but nothing's a guarantee. Obviously, with all these one-offs, another team that is very, very good in cup situations, I think, is Nashville. And that doesn't sound like much of a, you know, big take considering that they're second in the East, but I still think that people are sleeping on that team as a real contender.
So are they the only team that you think could potentially end the run in the East for New England? Do they have an Achilles heel, or do you think if they are for some reason knocked out, it won't be until the MLS Cup final against someone in the West, if it is maybe one of the teams that you think are best suited against them?
I mean, look, it's a one-off, so I wouldn't rule out anybody. I mean, look, theoretically, like, Montreal could win and then play New England in the New England's first playoff game, and I don't think that they really have a chance, but I didn't think Montreal had a chance last year against New England when they got Carlos Hill back, and Montreal weren't particularly good last year. They're better this year. But last year, it took a 95th-minute game winner from Gustavo Bo. They were 30 minutes away from penalties, and at penalties, obviously, anything can happen. In a one-off game, anything can happen. Any silly set piece goal, any you know, uncharacteristic mistake or insert anything here. So anybody can beat anybody on a given day. Sounds like a stupid cliche, but there's a reason why so many teams in this league, why there isn't more teams that win the Supporters Shield MLS Cup double, because it's really difficult.
Yeah, I love the one and done though in the playoffs. I'm so glad. Like, that is my preferred format.
It's a lot of fun.
We're visiting with Tom Bogert. Tom, let's get into this under 22. Ricardo Pepi's at the top of the list.
I am shocked.
By the way, I think, was it three players from FC Dallas in total made the list? Mm-hmm. Anything that stands out to you in particular? Oh, four of them. Let's see. Paxton Pomacall's on there as well. And Justin Che, along with Ferreira. Yeah. All really good players, by the way. Anything in particular that stands out to you about the list?
Yeah, I think that it gets more and more difficult to vote on this every year. I treat 22 to 22 very, very seriously. I took a lot of thought into it. There's some guys, like, look, I left Brenner off of my ballot. He was bought for $13 million by FC Cincinnati. And granted, that was just a really bad financial deal by them. He's still a really good player and a really highly rated player. Tyus Magno, I had him on my ballot. He got left off. $9 million player by NYCFC. You can just run down the list of guys who didn't make it that can just prop up. It was like, my goodness, like, how strong is these 22 players? Like, Breck Shea won it in, you know, whenever, 10 years ago. It used to be 24 under 24 because we were at a different stage of quality and youth development and everything. And just, you look at the top five, and you know, Ricardo Pepi, who's, you know, going to be a bona fide star. He's an Alphonso Davies level prospect. He's going to get sold for more than Alphonso Davies' base fee. He's going to break that
record.
You have Brian Rodriguez in the top five, who hasn't been, like, up to his huge talent level in MLS. He starts almost every game for the Uruguayan national team. Like, take a step back. The Uruguayan national team has a you know, 21-year-old starter that's in MLS. James Sands, he could walk into the Bundesliga right now. Like, there's just so many, like, good players. Caden Clark, I think I had him at, like,
8 or 9 on mine. He's already got bought by Red Bull Leipzig. Like, there are so many good young players and so much talent, and not just guys with potential, but guys who have 2,000 professional minutes. You look at Pepe. He's got 13 goals this year. He scored in the playoffs last year. James Sands has, like, 65 starts or whatever. Like, these aren't just guys who we're looking at and be like, hey, maybe one day we hope that they could be good. To be on this list, you have to have the combination of potential, and you've already proved it at MLS. And there are a lot of 17-year-olds on that list that have already done it, and I think that that's extremely, extremely interesting and extremely positive.
All right, Tommy Scoops, where's Ricardo Pepi going, and when's he going?
I think he'll go this winter, from all the folks I've talked to as of last week or 10 days ago, last time I checked in 100% on this. There had not yet been an official bid, but there have been informal talks with his representation and other clubs. You know, Ajax scouted him. Bayern likes him a lot. They've had him for multiple training sessions. They, according to the Athletic, they see him as a young Edin Dzeko. Wolfsburg, they're half the clubs in Italy. And, you know, as Fabrizio Romano put it, as well as I could probably say it, everybody knows about this kid. Like, he's on everybody's radar. There is no club that would look at him and say, I wouldn't want him. Like, it's there are going to be a lot of teams offering, and that's why the GMs and scouts and front office executives that I talk to are really confident that it's going to be at least a $15 million base fee with incentives and with a selling percentage. If I had to guess, you know, when Bayern Munich really want a player, traditionally Bayern Munich signed that player. So if Bayern really, really do want him, I think Bayern will sign him. But that's not to say that that is a foregone conclusion. There's nothing been agreed. There's nothing been seriously talked about, to the best of my knowledge, either. So there are a lot of teams to watch, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this winter.
He told me, and I think he's told other people, that that Robert Lewandowski is his favorite player to watch. And I actually see, I'm not saying he's Lewandowski. Somebody's going to jump on Twitter. I can't believe you're comparing him to Lewandowski. I see similarities in the way they score their goals. And he said what he loves about Lewandowski is the efficiency with which he scores. He doesn't need several touches. He doesn't need to dribble somebody and then shoot from long range. It's one-touch finishes. It's efficiency with every part of his body. And I see that from Pepe. And if I see one more person discredit his goals because they're so easy to score, I'm just going to smile every time I see it, because
that's what good goal scorers do.
Right.
Make it look easy.
I just hope if he goes to a place like that, I hope he gets to play a lot and score a lot, because you want somebody that's in form when it comes around to these national team games, right?
Yeah, I agree. But I really do trust Bayern when it comes to youth development. I think that if they didn't see a plan for him, they would loan him out. They've done really well with Chris Richards, that they kept him, they gave him chances to kind of break into the first team or see what he's like in training camp. And then the last 2 years, they've said, you know what, we'll let you get loaned out. And he got really valuable experience with Hoffenheim, and then he's back there again now. So, I mean, he probably wouldn't be a regular every game guy for Bayern, but if Bayern bought him and decided to not loan him out, then I think that he would get genuine minutes. Again, that's not going to be every game on a team with Robert Lewandowski, but that would be, he's going to be in the game day squad, or maybe once in a while he'll go down and play with the second team, which is they're now in the fourth tier, which is obviously much, much below him. But again, I really do trust the way that club does transfer business and youth development.
Yeah, that would be some big news. Hey, Tom, thank you so much for the time. We know when the news happens, we'll get it from you. So we appreciate it as always. And hopefully the U.S. is out there making us look really smart by having a great performance against Costa Rica, and we won't have to go back and delete this whole segment of the show. Tom, thanks a lot, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, now, thank you so much for having me.
All right, that's Tom Bogert. We'll be back to preview Sporting Kansas City and Vancouver right after this on the Sporting KC Show, presented by Michelob Ultra. And we're back to wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate you listening, downloading, liking, all of those things. And a reminder that we are presented by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Nate Buchady along with Ali Trost as we get ready for another match, finally. It took us a while to get here. We've had a little time off, but now Sporting Kansas City will head north of the border to take on the Vancouver Whitecaps Sunday night at 9 o'clock. That game can be heard on our sister station, ESPN Kansas City, 94.5 FM. You can watch it on Bally Sports Kansas City. And it's going to be a big game. These are two teams that that know each other well because of the Western Conference. Vancouver fighting for a playoff spot. They're just below the playoff line right now. And Sporting Kansas City in second place. Alley trying to keep up and stay within striking distance of Seattle. 5 points back of the Sounders right now. And 1 point ahead of Colorado, who are in third place. So this is another big opportunity for Sporting to try to get some points on the road.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, we were talking a little bit about the game today as we're getting ready for the broadcast on Sunday. And, I mean, Sporting Kansas City hasn't, this season at least, been the best coming off of a break that extends into double digits. And, of course, with the little international break that they just had, coming off of, you know, some good momentum, a good win against the Houston Dynamo there right before, you know, what was that? Not last week and the weekend before. But that's a little bit of a concern for a team like Vancouver that is trying to claw their way into the playoff picture. Sporting Kansas City not comfortable necessarily because, well, they're comfortable in the sense that they'll make the playoffs, but still fighting for that number one seed and that home field advantage. But I don't know. This is one of those games, especially when you look at just kind of the surfaces at Vancouver with the turf and the travel, all of those things considered, not to mention Sporting coming off of that much rest. You just wonder if this could turn into a trap game. But, you know, that's maybe been the trend this season, not necessarily what will be the case going into the game on Sunday. But the team will be without Alan Pulido.
Yeah, we got the news from Peter Vermes on Friday of last week that Alan Pulido's undergone knee surgery. They're hoping this is a minor cleanup situation that will only keep him out a few weeks, which means he would be ready to go by the playoffs. And look, that's when you want him.
Right.
I mean, they've shown they can win regular season games. Kyrie Shelton can help him up top in those guards. Their record is phenomenal when he starts at the number nine. But you want Alan Pulido healthy for the playoffs, so let's hope that's the case.
Well, and I saw a lot of people online, you know, like, oh, like, he just can't stay healthy. It's like, well, he's probably getting this surgery because he needs it, you know? Like, this isn't something that any player hopes to have to go through, especially at this point in the season. But the fact that, you know, it does seem, at least the way that Vermes characterized it, as a cleanup, it wasn't, you know, a severe surgery by any means. 3 to 5 weeks was the timeline we got. And we saw what happened when you didn't have Alan Pulido last year. Not that he was the only reason that Sporting made the exit a little bit earlier than they would have liked against Minnesota, but it certainly helps when you have him as an option for this team. And with how good they've been with Kyrie Shelton, Alan Pulido is just a player that you want to have available during the postseason. They had to make that decision to get the surgery, and the timeline should hopefully put him back in the mix.
Well, he clearly been, you know, dealing with this knee situation for quite some time and trying to find a way to fight his way through it and play his way through it. And then you get to the decision where it's like, okay, maybe shut it down now.
Yeah.
Get it taken care of and then be ready so you're not playing whatever percentage he was trying to fight through it. And hopefully that means he'll come back actually healthy and ready to give it a full go. Now, these two teams played earlier in the season at Children's Mercy Park. Sporting won 3-0. A brace from Alan Pulido in that one. So he's not going to be available for this one. If you go back to last year, Sporting Kansas City opened up the regular season with a 3-1 win at Vancouver. Alan Pulido scored in his SKC debut in that one, as did Gadi Kinda.
Oh, yeah.
And then they added a fancy goal at the end by two guys that are no longer with Sporting, between Gersos Ruleta, as he told us it was called, and the pass to Hurtado, who smashed it home to make it 3-1. But it was also famous, Ali, because that was the GIF game. I call it a GIF. I don't know if you're a GIF or a GIF person.
Know, I think I'm definitely a GIF person, but some people get really like fired up about GIF, JIF.
I mostly call it a GIF because it annoys Jake Gutierrez on the morning show.
And for that reason, I totally I stand with you.
But
on
I
that.
Also just think that GIF sounds kind of like a little bit of a GIF.
Okay, here's where I'm going to come in here and back up my GIF, because the GIF we're talking about is a gift to the internet
that keeps on giving. One of the greatest GIFs we've ever seen of Peter Vermes with the blank off in three. Proof of what I try to explain to my children all the time, which is humans react only 25% to what you say and 75% to how you say it. Because Peter Vermes showed that you can say that phrase in three different ways and have three completely different meanings, sometimes in the same sentence. And it was all great. It was good fun. I know Peter doesn't really love that it gets talked about all the time, but he's pointed out, like, it's one of those things where in today's world, you never know how the world's going to react. Is it going to be, are they going to, you know, castigate you and yell at you, or are they going to think it's hilarious? Peter has the magic touch because everybody thinks that was awesome. And it was one of those things where you could tell he wasn't telling the other person to do that. He was saying, did you really just say that
right.
to me? That's basically what he was saying. And the two of them made up, and now we can laugh about it. And it's one of the greatest.
I post it at minimum once a year, at least every few months. I like try to bring it back in the rotation. No, but I mean, we know that Peter Vermes, like anyone who's watched a game, whether in person or on your television set, Peter Vermes is not void of passion. He actually talks about it a lot. Like, he's like, I'm actually able to, relatively speaking, be pretty calm after games and how I talk about the game itself, unless of course something like crazy happens that maybe, you know, trickles into the post game. But he's like, I get it all out in the game. And so, you know, if you're getting into a little sideline scuffle with Peter Vermes, just know you're getting him at his most passionate and like intense moment. You know, like you're not getting him post game, you're not getting him pregame. Like he's in the moment. And it, hey, I'm just happy that we have that incredible gift, whether Peter likes it, it's around or not. I think, I don't know. Part of them, probably. I mean, it's a pretty badass gift.
Well, here's the thing. This is now a Vancouver Whitecaps team that's gone through a coaching change because they fired Mark Dos Santos in the season. Why did they fire him when the team is in the playoff running? It looks like it was because of a performance in the Canadian Championship, in which they lost to Pacific FC 4-3. He was let go after that. Since that happened, let's see here. One win. So they've gone win, loss, draw, win, draw, win, and then lost to Seattle. So they have been playing really good stuff. And then they did have a 4-1 4-1 loss to Seattle in their last game. Seattle's really good.
Yeah.
I don't think most people will say, well, you're no good if you lost
that
Seattle.
And not only Seattle really good, like they're good at scoring. They're good at scoring goals. So if you lose to Seattle 4-1, it looks worse than, you know, what you may have lost to against another team that could have just been a 2-1 loss or a 1-0 loss. But no, I mean, 7 wins and 7 draws during those last 15 games is pretty remarkable. And in that one loss coming to Seattle, we'll see how much of an outlier that loss actually is when these two teams face off on Sunday. But it definitely won't be an easy one for Sporting. And I really just think that where they're getting this Vancouver team, like the point that they are currently at in this final stretch, fighting for a playoff spot, the form that they've been in outside of that one game, and then Sporting, of course, coming off rest where they've, you know, at other points this season, collected a record of 2 draws and a loss after those double-digit rests. I mean, look, however much you want to play into that or not, I think Sporting Kansas City, at least in recent history, have learned, you know, maybe the mentality that it takes to come out after coming out against Seattle at home after some rest and being disappointed with how they start in that first half, turning things around. That happened recently enough that maybe that kind of sticks with them here, where they're like, hey, we need to, you know, maybe come out of the gates this way coming off of a break versus what we just, you know, had seen.
So, and for Vancouver, their interim head coach is Vanni Sartini, who was the club's director of methodology before this. So now he's...
I'm the methodology at Sports Radio 8.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You are. You know what? And we're all watching our backs now, Allie, in case we have a loss to Pacific or something like that. You might just step right in and boom.
No, that's it. I've actually just never heard that title before.
I had neither.
I'm sure it's like synonymous with something like common that we see, but...
Technical director or something like that. But like director of methodology now, interim coach. So
hey. How about that? Well, hey, I also just want to give some updates since we are following the World Cup qualifiers. Daniel Shalloway and the Hungarian national team played England to a 1-1 draw today. And then Gadi Kinda in Israel played Moldova to a 2-1, 2-1. So that was those were the results for Sporting Kansas City players today.
I watched the Hungarian game. Daniel did not get to play in this one, but it was a big result.
Yeah.
Winning at or getting a draw at Wembley against England. They booed the England players off the field afterwards because they didn't want to draw in that one. So, hey, congratulations. But now Daniel, come back home and help Sporting Kansas City get a win in Vancouver. That's going to do it for us. Thanks to Tom Bogert for joining us. Thanks to you for listening. We'll see you Sunday night, 9 o'clock, Bally Sports Kansas City and ESPN Kansas City 94.5 FM, Sporting KC at the Vancouver Whitecaps. And we'll see you next time on the Sporting Kansas City Show.